A to the K.
Hello, welcome to the A to the K Wrestling Show, where today we are joined by WWE and Impact Hall of Famer, the one and only legendary Devon Dudley. Thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
I know, it's absolutely our pleasure. So what we'd like to do, we just start off by sort of going back to your old ECW days, if we may. And we were just wondering sort of, how did the idea of joining the Dudley Brothers come about, and what you thought of the gimmick at the time?
Well, I didn't think anything. I was a young punk kid trying to make it in the business.
Yeah.
And when I got the nod of approval to go down for my tryout at the ECW dojo with Taz and Perry Saturn, I was ecstatic. So I'm sorry, my son just walked in from school.
Hello, son. No problem.
So I was ecstatic about it. So I really didn't have any thoughts. I just wanted to make it somewhere. Yeah. And at that point, I didn't particularly care for ECW, believe it or not, because I was used to the WWF, Hulk Hogan and Andre era. So all of this blood and barbed wire bats and tables and all of that, I thought it was barbaric.
No.
Just like a lot of wrestling fans did back then, and that weren't willing to make a change. But I knew that in order for me to even remotely make it to WWE, I had to go somewhere and start somewhere, and ECW was knocking on the door. I wound up falling in love with ECW and didn't want to leave. Even when it was announced that we were going to WWE, I didn't want to leave. I had reservations about it because I was very happy and content in ECW. Yeah. I was a big fish in a medium pond. Now I'm about to be a small fish in this huge pond, and I was scared to death. You know, so, but ECW helped me to grow, and it was something I needed before I made that big leap to WWE.
Absolutely. Obviously, when you were in ECW, you were paired up with Joel Gertner to start off with, who was, you know, somewhat of a bit of a heat magnet with the fans. How was it working with him? And obviously, what was the reactions with when, obviously, in the arenas and also when traveling as well?
Well, Gertner had a lot of heat. And again, I was a young kid that just coming in, so nobody really knew who I was. But I started to gain momentum as a heel with some of the promos that I cut. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do that and really, really make a difference. So Gertner just added to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously you mentioned briefly before about moving from ECW, joining WWE. Now, obviously, in 1999, I believe it was when you left ECW for WWE. And I just want to know what it was like sort of coming into the locker room at that point, especially obviously with so much change going on in WWE at the time.
Mm. Which locker room? ECW?
Oh, sorry. In joining WWE during that sort of invasion.
Well, there really wasn't a change. The change had happened way before I got in there. The Attitude Era had just begun.
Yeah.
So the only thing that was different for anybody was the fans, because we went from the Bret and Shawn era now to the Austin and Rock era. And it was a very special and magical moment. Nobody can fully understand what it was like unless you were there, unless you were wrestling within that organization, and how we were as a family. You know, the company was already on the ropes from, you know, getting welded by WCW in the ratings. So now the WWE/WWF was starting to make a huge comeback. And Bubba and I just happened to come in at the right time, and at the right time during the Attitude Era. And it was a special moment for us. We loved it. We enjoyed it. It was great. The locker room was great. I mean, everybody was on one accord, and that was to beat WCW. you know, and everybody just was having fun. Money was being made. I mean, we were rock stars. That's the only way I can say it.
Yeah.
A lot of people who do interviews and talk about the Attitude Era who was there will tell you the same thing. We were like rock stars. We couldn't go anywhere. I don't think professional wrestling has ever gone to heights like that before. I mean, you know, professional wrestling was this thing that you didn't talk about. You kept it in the closet. And if you admitted that you were a wrestling fan, then you were laughed at and shunned away from. But now wrestling, pro wrestling was cool, you know, thanks to Austin and thanks to Rock. The Rock brought in the girls. I mean, that was great. I mean, you know, you go from a bunch of men screaming and hollering, now you got a bunch of women equaling the amount of people that were there in terms of the men, because it was always, you would see the majority of men. Now you're seeing a lot of women there, and they're like on the same level as the men in terms of being equal in attendance. That we could thank The Rock for. <You know? laughs> And of course, the badass demeanor and heels being loved and cheered as opposed to booed, that was thanks to Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was fun to be a heel at that point. And we were just happy to come in and be a part of it, period. I mean, again, the locker room welcomed us with open arms, and it was nerve-wracking. It was scary, but we went in there, we did what we knew what we could do, and the rest is history.
Absolutely. I think, obviously, something that you're remembered for, you know, a lot within WWE with the likes of Edge and Christian and the Hardys was obviously TLC. Now, there's a rumor saying that you were really scared of heights when you were in those matches. So firstly, is that true?
That was no rumor. That was no rumor. I admitted it right off the bat. I said it in countless interviews. I've said it during the WWE documentaries of it. I was scared of heights. Even doing the What's Up in ECW, if you go back and look, when we did do the What's Up, I did it on the second rope. I never went to the top. And then a couple of times we did it in WWE, and Bubba pulled me aside and said, "Devon, I know you don't like heights, but I think you might have to go to the top rope for this one because of where we are." You know, and because it's not getting the pop that we wanted to get after doing that move in WWE. So it was kind of like, okay, well, now I got to get used to going to the top rope. And of course, I tried my hand at the live events as opposed to on TV first. And a couple of times I almost lost my balance, fell backwards, you know, this and that, because I was scared. I was trembling. I didn't want to go up on the top rope. And over time, I learned. And next thing you know, I got comfortable with the rope and be on that top turnbuckle. And, you know, I was flying from there.
Although ladders is a whole different,
different caliber. Exactly.
So you mentioned the What's Up there. So while we're on the sort of topic, I just wondered, when it comes to doing the What's Up before the diving headbutts, whose idea was that to sort of incorporate that?
Excuse me, I'll be honest with you, I cannot remember if it was Bubba or myself. It might have been Bubba that came up with it in ECW. I don't really remember. I just know that the first couple of times we did it in ECW, because it had never been seen before, a deliberate headbutt to somebody's balls, oh my God, you know, that has to hurt, because again, it had never been done before. And that was one of the things about the 90s that was so good. And I think why so many people got over, and the attitude that ever got over, because we were doing things that nobody had ever done before.
Yeah.
It's like watching Ozzy Osbourne when he had the reality show on MTV. Excuse me, when he first had that reality show, it was huge because of the fact Ozzy was doing crazy shit on TV. And that nobody had ever seen before. You know, there was a line you didn't cross, regardless to who you were, when you were on TV, because TV had that rule book: don't do this, you can do that; don't do this, you can do that; don't say that, but you can say this. And Ozzy took that rule book and pissed all over it and threw it out the window, and thus the Osbournes were born. And it was making such huge rounds, you know, that everybody started watching it. And everybody was like wondering what Ozzy was going to say or do next. You know, was he going to pee in the pool? You know, was Sharon going to let him do it? Was his daughter, you know, going to curse him out? I mean, it was all sorts of things. It was the first time ever. So I think that's why the attitude ever got over so well, because we were doing things that you shouldn't do. And you couldn't do it. And that's why we were getting picketed and protest against every time we got to the arenas. It was a wild time back then. I like to tell people it was like Sodom and Gomorrah. If you know your Bible, it was like Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, again, drugs, sex, and rock and roll. That's what it was all about back in the Attitude Era.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously you had all of the kind of success and the tag title wins and everything as the Dudleys. And then right after WrestleMania 18, the decision was made to obviously split the team. And obviously you debuted as Reverend Devon. And you've obviously mentioned there as well about the Bible and stuff. So how did your parents feel about that gimmick with them having obviously been a bishop and a pastor? And whose idea was it to split up the team?
Well, it was Vince's idea. He thought at the time it was a good idea. And me and Bubba did not think that. We thought there was still a lot more to do, but we weren't going to tell the man no. We were getting paid a boatload of money, and you know, and we were seen on a national level. So why would we tell him no? You know, And it was one of those things where, you know, if it didn't work out, we can get back together and take off where we left off. And the thing about it was, you know, I can't speak for Bubba, because Bubba, you know, I really didn't follow Bubba when he was on Raw at the time. But I followed myself, of course, and I thought the Reverend Devon gimmick was great. I thought it was doing really, really good. It got sabotaged. And, you know, it was just recently, and a few years back, I found out why it got sabotaged and who was responsible for it. To this day, I don't think this person knows that I know, or this person does have an idea that I know, but I don't say anything. And I don't even hold a grudge towards it. I just let it go. You know, because it was what it was. When you got Triple H, who lays down for me in the middle of the ring on SmackDown and let Reverend Devon pin him dead, that tells you right there, he ain't going to lay down for nobody, especially a gimmick that he didn't think was good. The gimmick was getting over. It was going great. And this person thought otherwise, and it was what it was. I do recall, you know, Triple H telling another wrestler, I think Devon got the short end of the stick on this one, because he was actually getting over. I mean, I'm asking for donations for a fake church, and people are coming down out the rafters and putting dollar bills in my collection plate. It got to the point where the dollars were falling out as I'm walking, and there was a trail of dollar bills leading up towards the ramp back into Gorilla. I mean, that's how much money was given to me. And I just remember a certain person said, if you say what you're going to say, if you say it right, they'll believe in you and they'll do it. It's no different than a TV evangelist who sits there and lies through his teeth just to get the people to, you know, put money into his church. I was doing the same thing, but I was doing it in WWE.
Obviously really remember that gimmick. It was probably one of the best things on SmackDown at the time, because we sort of not long had the brand split. It was amazingly over.
That was the sad part about it. It really was. When you have your co-workers, you know, in there, you got Rikishi, you got Rey Mysterio, you got Ron Simmons, you know, all these guys who I'm working with telling you that, damn, you're doing a really good job. And, you know, here it is. If you look at it, you know, the top of the list was Triple H that I wrestled and beat. Val Venus, Mark Henry, Randy Orton, John Cena. I mean, all of those guys, we had great matches and everything, and I went over on all of them. But yet somebody thought to get in Vince's ear and to tell Vince, it's not worth it. Don't worry about it. And if you know how to talk to Vince, and if you talk to him at the right moment, at the right time, he'll buy what you're saying. I'm not saying that he's naive or whatever. I'm not saying that, but sometimes you and I both know you could talk to anybody who's a boss or what have you. If you get them at the right time, they'll listen.
Yeah. Just goes to show, however it was, it's obviously a very competitive industry and they wanted to make sure they had your spot. So, shame.
Yep.
So, obviously one element of the gimmick was the start of Deacon Batista, as he was at the time. Obviously went on to work with Triple H and Evolution, and obviously now gone on to Hollywood. So I just wanted to ask sort of what it was like working with Batista, especially at the sort of the beginning of his career, really.
Well, it was great. I mean, Dave was a great guy. I love Dave to death, even to this day. But it was very difficult in the very beginning, because he was such a big guy that when he was training certain people thought that it would be best just to train him as a big man and not take any bumps or anything like that. So by the time he got with me, I thought it was a joke. I thought somebody was, you know, playing a rib on me, because I remember during the match with Triple H, Hunter was going to lean up against the post on the outside and Batista was there. He was supposed to run at him with a clothesline. And of course, Hunter moves and Dave gets taken out by the post. And I remember when I told Dave the spot, Dave looked at me and he goes, "Rev," because he never called me Devon. He always called me Rev. He was like, "Rev, do you think, how do I do that?" And I just looked at him. I said, "How do you do what?" He goes, "Well, Hunter's going to be laying across the post and I'm supposed to come with a clothesline. How do you want me to take it?" I just looked at him. I went, are you serious?" He goes, "I'm dead serious. I don't know how to do it." I was like, "Oh, shit." And I went, "No," I said, I'm being punked. I was like, "There's no way I'm being punked." And I looked at him again. I was like, "You are serious." He goes, "Yeah, I'm being serious, Devon." Because I didn't know Dave. You know, me and Dave had just met that day that I wrestled Triple H. So I had no idea. But he was dead serious. And then that's when, after the match, we had a conversation. He was telling me how they were training him. They weren't training him like they do big guys today. They were only training him to do like one or two moves and that was it. So he didn't have that realm of knowledge on how to do things a lot. So when he was with me, we basically would get to the building early and we would go over stuff and try to make the matches better just to get him at a level where he needed to be. And he was always grateful for that. You know, he always told me, you know, "I don't know what I would have done if you didn't take me underneath your wing." I mean, let me tell you something. I had Randy Orton. I had Batista, I had Maven, I had Dawn Marie, that Motley Crue right there. Oh my God, you talking about, that's why I have no hair. And every time I see Randy Orton, I tell him, I go, "You're the reason why I'm bald right now." I said, "If I had to go in a car with you again," I was like, "it'll probably be different because you were young back then. You were like 22, 23 years old and freaking just ready to freaking piss all on the world." I said, "Now you're calm and cool and collective." I said, "But back then you drove me insane. All of you guys were insane." I was like, "How did I get stuck babysitting you for my," because Umanga was part of that too. I was like, "How the hell do I get caught babysitting all you guys?" I was like, "This is crazy." I was like, every time I tell, they were literally like my kids, my boys, you know, like if I was away, like if I had to take a break or two from the live events, I would have to tell them, "Guys, I'm not going to be here this week. Please don't do anything stupid. Stay out of trouble and behave yourselves." I'm said, "Serious. You don't have me come back in. I have to find out something else." And I would get every time, "Okay, Devon. Okay, I got it. And Batista, yes, Rev. And, you know, and it was one incident that happened where I guess, and me and Randy Orton was just talking about this. He was in the ring with Dave. My son was being christening. And so I had to fly to New York. So I took that week off. And so it was Dawn Marie. It was Batista. And it was Maven. And I think Umanga was in the car at the time. They were in the ring wrestling, Dave and Randy Orton. And Randy Orton decided to pull that Razor Ramon, slapping Dave on the back of the head. And he pissed Dave off. And Dave whipped him into the ropes and gave him a clothesline and knocked Randy stupid. And I went, and then I remember going, when I heard the story, because Dawn Marie called me, like, she was like, "Oh my God, Devon, when are you coming back? I go, "Dawn Marie, calm down." I said, "What's wrong with you?" She goes, "It's Dave and Randy." I said, "What?" I said, "Oh shit, what about Dave and Randy?" And he was like, Randy was slapping Batista in the back of the head, and Batista got mad and clotheslined him and knocked him out. I was like, "What?" I said, "Where's Dave?" He was like, he's inside the gym or something, because they were all at the gym. So I called Dave. I said, "Dave, what the hell happened?" He said, "Rev, you just started slapping me in the back of the head. I didn't know what to do. I got a little angry. I told him to stop. I whipped him off in the ring and gave him a clothesline, and I guess I knocked him out." I said, "You think?" I was like, "Dave, I asked you guys to be on your best behavior. I'm going one day I'm going." I'm like, "You guys can't keep it up. What the hell is going on?" And he was like, "Sorry, Rev, I'm so sorry." He was like, "I won't do it again." I was like, "You're damn right." I said, "They're going to fire your ass. You keep doing that. You cannot beat people up in the ring like that." You know, and, you know, we laugh about it now because it was like one big joke. We laugh about it. But You know, but back then it wasn't funny because I was just like, oh God. And somehow or another, I'm not even there and I'm going to get blamed for it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Obviously, you mentioned a few times there about obviously Triple H, and you know, we'd be remiss not to obviously ask with obviously his you know, new role in the company now and stuff like that. What what's the atmosphere and the vibe like now, both in NXT and WWE? Do you feel there's a bit more of a buzz since Triple H has kind of taken over?
Well, let me just say this. First and foremost, the man that started it all, Vince McMahon, I am very honored and privileged to have worked under him, for him to have been my boss for almost 20 years. And I've learned a lot from Vince. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, there will never, ever be another Vince McMahon. You know, even when, regardless as a producer, if I didn't agree with him and I was angry at him or what have you, I always said every company needs a Vince McMahon, because you have to have somebody with Vince's aura and Vince's demeanor to be able to put these prima donnas in their place and tell them no when you need to tell them no, because a lot of promoters don't do that. And I'm not going to say any names on certain promotions, but there's certain promotions that don't do that. And this is why turmoil is going crazy right now. Like I said, every company needs a Vince McMahon. So, but like Vince used to always tell the wrestlers, sometimes, you know, the vision is not there anymore, or sometimes you just need a new vision to help you out. And I think Triple H is that vision. I think Triple H got his feet wet with everything with NXT. And when he started NXT, he took indie wrestlers and made them into stars. That's very hard to do that. You know, I don't care what nobody says. You can say what you want about Triple H, but that's very hard to do that. He made NXT a household name when you talk about professional wrestling. So that got his feet wet there. And then now, you know, taking over for Vince and doing what he's doing, I'm very, very happy about it. The atmosphere in the locker room is tremendous because, again, it's like when you got a tag team in the ring and the tag team titles change hands. Regardless if you like them or not, it's going to be a huge pop because it's something new and the people are going to love that. That's just the way it is. It's the same thing here. It's like we had a title change. You know, it went from Vince to Triple H, and now everybody's excited to see the new vision and where we're going. Morale is up, and people are just genuinely excited about everything. But again, we cannot forget or deny what Vince has done for this business, not just the company, but for the business. If he didn't take the chance at WrestleMania and did what he did, none of us would be here. You guys wouldn't have your shows because wrestling would still be that closet place that you don't talk about, you know. But Vince made professional wrestling what it is today. Regardless to what company you work for, every company should be giving him and pay him homage regardless, because he made this. The house that I'm living in now, he paid for this, you know, in full, and this and that. He gave me a shot when nobody else did. So I will always be indebted and grateful for Vince. But I'm also a Triple H guy. You know, I love Hunter, the things that he's done. He's the reason why when our contracts fell through in 2016, he came to me, pulled me aside, and offered me a job as a producer. And, you know, and I got to thank him because, you know, think about it. I wasn't ready to retire at that time. But if you think about it, I was in my 40s. The pandemic hit. There were people being let go left and right. And I could have been one of those people that could have been let go because I'm past my prime. You know, nobody wants to see an old aging Devon, you know. So, you know, here it is. You know, I'm a producer and I'm working backstage. And I remember just sitting there hearing some of the cuts. And I'm like, damn. Thank God I got out when I did. Thank God Hunter pulled me aside and did what he did, because if not, I could have been one of those guys that could have been, you know, on those, when you wake up in the morning and you read the internet and it's like, oh, Devon Dudley was let go. I could have been one of those guys. So I am extremely grateful for Hunter and everything that he's ever done for me. I mean, the man has never lied to me. Whatever he's ever said has come true, and he's done what he said he was going to do. He's blessed me and my family. Stephanie McMahon is another one. You know, when I had my stroke about 2 years ago, Stephanie called me on the phone. And at the time I was with the doctors because I had just had brain surgery as well, because they had to break up the blood clot. in the brain. And so I didn't have my phone on me, and Stephanie called twice because she had just spoke to my wife and then called me twice and said, "Devon, I keep missing you. I'm sorry." She was like, "Your wife told me you were okay, but I'm not going to stop calling you until I hear it from your mouth personally." Stephanie didn't have to do that, you know? Stephanie didn't do that at all, but she did. And she, you know, as big as this company is and as much responsibility that she has, for her to sit there and to continuously call me to make sure that I was still breathing and alive, I'll be always grateful for her, you know? And I remember I made a comment, and I made a comment about Stephanie, and I guess I was just overwhelmed because I said I was infatuated with Stephanie, and then the dirt sheets went crazy with it. Oh my God, Devon's infatuated with Stephanie and this and that and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, you jackasses. I was like, I should have said admired, because I admire Stephanie a lot.
Yeah.
I think she's a fantastic woman. I think she has the same business savvy and sense like her father does. And that's the one thing I always said. A lot of people don't want to piss Vince off, but you don't want to piss Stephanie off. Have you ever seen Stephanie in that ring when she gives those slaps are for real. There ain't nothing holding back. You know, ain't nothing back. So I'm very grateful for the Levesque family. And again, they've done nothing but great things for me and my family. And I will always sing the praises of Stephanie and Hunter.
Yeah, you know, it's lovely to hear the sort of positive side of things. Obviously, with what we do and what you see in the media a lot is always trying to pick at the negatives of WWE. But it's heartwarming to hear just sort of how they are as people on a human level, you know. So while we're talking about obviously your work as a producer on NXT, I just wondered if you could sort of talk about how you've sort of found sort of moving into that role and. You know, I suppose firstly, is it something whilst you maybe didn't expect to do it as soon as you have, was it something you always sort of envisioned sort of going into as you sort of left your in-ring career?
Well, I wasn't ready to be a producer. When the contracts fell through in 2016, I was visibly extremely upset about it. And because I had signed the contract to extend another year, going into from 2016 to 2017. And, you know, business dealings behind the scenes, which, you know, I don't want to get involved with, but it didn't happen. And the contract that I signed was null and void because, you know, not everybody was participating at the time with the contract. So therefore, what I signed was gone. And I remember telling Hunter, I go, "I'm not ready to be a producer." I said, "I still got a lot in the tank that I have to prove." Especially after the Reverend Devon thing went south. I said, you know, I even told him, I said, "Put me with Apollo, put me with one of the younger kids to help him out." And, you know, Hunter said, "Devon, I would love to," but he was like, you know, "The old man wants, you know, he just wants you guys as a team. He doesn't want to break you guys up and this and that and blah, blah, blah." And that's one of the difficult things you have to deal with when you are a team, you know? So it's one of those things where I was like, all right, I was like, well, I don't guess I don't have a choice. Cause at the time I was going through a divorce and I didn't want to have to go to Japan. Cause if I didn't work in WWE, I was going to go to Japan.
Right.
And because I was going through the divorce, I didn't think that was feasible to try to go back to Japan, especially if something was to go wrong here in the States, how would I get back?
Yeah,
you know, and handle the business here. So I opted not to do that. And then, you know, Hunter told me, he's like, "Think about it." And this was right before we went on the air to say farewell to the Dudleys on that Monday Night Raw. And he said, "Don't say anything to anybody." He's like, "Just come to me with your decision." And right before he walked off, I said, "I got my decision." And he was like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "I'm ready to give you my answer." He goes, "Okay, what is it?" I said, "I'll do it." I said, "I'll take it." And he was like, "All right, great." He was like, "We'll get you started. We'll talk after the night's over. When you guys are done in the ring, come talk to me and, you know, we'll iron out everything and then we'll go from there." So I was like, okay. So my thing was, I never was ready. I still wanted to wrestle. You know, I still had a lot in the tank and it just didn't work out that way. Sometimes the cards are given to you in a different way and that's fine. I have no ill will about it or any griefs about it, but it is what it is. Vince didn't see it that way. So it is what it is. I'm very grateful though now, because look at me now, I can do this for the next 30 or 40 years as a producer. Mm-hmm. I don't have to take another bump in my life, which I can't now because after my back surgery, but I don't have to take another bump in my life and be paid very well. And my thing is helping out the younger talent. And then what happened was, how I got to be in NXT, to answer the second question, was that when I found that I was going in for back surgery, how bad it was, I couldn't do the traveling anymore. You know, I didn't want to be in a plane anymore. I didn't want to be in and out of a car. I'm 45 minutes away from the performance center. So I'm home in my bed every night, you know, regardless if I work 4 to 5 days a week, you know, at the performance center, I'm still going home to my wife and kids. And that was another thing. I didn't want to be away from my wife and kids. You know, I'm actually in a marriage right now that I truly love and I honor. I love my wife to death. I mean, she's been there through my stroke. She's been there through the back surgery and everything. So I don't ever want to leave her unless God takes me away. And I pray every night, please don't take me. Please let me get another 30 or 40 years with her. Because, I mean, I'm just having such a great time in this marriage. I've never been. This is probably the happiest I think I've ever been in a relationship. And now I got two beautiful young girls. I got 6 kids altogether. I got 4 boys and 2 girls. And my 2 younger girls, they drive me insane. I think Randy Orton, Umaga, and Batista, they got rid of my hair, but now I think my girls are getting rid of my goatee. I'm starting to see less and less of my goatee growing. I'm like, I attribute that to my girls, but you know, I'm just happy to be in NXT, helping out the younger guys. And the one thing I love working with Shawn Michaels and Matt Bloom is that they give me the creative freedom in my matches. They give me the blueprint, but they say, Devon, we trust you. Go out there and make it happen. And that's what I do. I take a little bit from yesterday and bring it into today's wrestling, you know, because yesterday was what was once old is now new again, especially with a lot of these wrestling fans that say they're true wrestling fans, but don't know the history of it. So I can go back and do things that they've never seen before. You know, I did something with the Bruno Sammartino, Larry Zbyszko angle when Zbyszko turned on Bruno. And I did that in one of the matches in NXT. And even the NXT kids had no idea what the vision I had for that match. They had no idea. And I sat down and I showed them and they were like, wow, we didn't know that. I was like, yeah, I was like, this is what I believe will happen and to come true. And I remember doing that, having those guys do it. They did it to a T. And of course, we changed it up and made, you know, put yesterday and mixed it up with today's wrestling. But, you know, I remember Matt Bloom and Shawn Michaels going, that was perfect. I loved it, you know? And I remember telling Matt Bloom about it. And he was like, I thought the story looked familiar. I was like, yeah, I got it from Bruno and Zbyszko, you know? So I love doing things like that. I love taking yesterday because a lot of people always talk about missing yesterday's wrestling and this and that. So if you can bring a little bit of it back, then why not? When you tell the story definitely. Of the match, why not? Because then somebody go, oh my God, that looks familiar. I know what that is. Oh yeah, yeah. They're doing the same thing that they did back in 1970 something. You're damn right I'm doing it. It's
working. Hell yeah. Obviously you mentioned then around, you know, your back surgery and obviously, you know, your stroke from a couple of years ago and stuff as well. So we actually had tickets. We were for the convention in Liverpool, which obviously you were unable to attend because of the back surgery and stuff like that. So we just want to know, firstly, how are you doing? And secondly, do you think you might maybe come over here to a convention in the future?
Absolutely. I believe that the powers to be from that convention that I missed, we was going to try to reschedule it for this coming April because first off, it was broken down because of COVID. It was COVID that stopped us doing it from the first time. And then I had the stroke, but then COVID was still stopping us because we couldn't fly anywhere. You know, the US was shut down, you guys were shut down. So we couldn't go over there and do it. And, you know, at that point, even if it was open, I wasn't going to be able to do it because I just had the stroke. But then I got past the stroke and now here it is. We're ready to go. We had given the green light and then my back started giving out on me. I was like, oh, freak. And then, you know, I basically had to send a letter to those guys to let them know from the doctor, listen, this is legit. This is not like some wrestlers who fake an injury just because they don't want to go over there. You know, no. I was like, I love the UK. I absolutely love it. The UK fans are the most exciting fans I think I've ever performed in front of. Not to mention, the ladies are very easy on the eyes. So, but again, that love was it. My past. That was my past. Not now. I got a beautiful woman here. So, but you know, I love the UK. I love your culture. I love everything about the UK. I love the way you guys talk. I try to act like I'm British and it doesn't work. I try to play that. It don't work. I'm horrible. My wife goes, please stop. Please. You know, but no, I love it. But I believe that we're going to try to do it for this April.
Oh, fingers crossed. Yeah. We'll be there.
Yeah,
definitely. Huh. So obviously at the convention, you were scheduled to appear with Bubba. Now, obviously there's a lot of rumors and talk on a dirt sheet, and I don't really want to feed into that, but I sort of ask, because obviously you're both on very different paths at the moment. So I just wondered if you're still in touch. Do you still speak much?
Yeah, actually, we just spoke yesterday about another autograph signing that we're going to do together. You know, a lot of people thought that me and Bubba were at odds, and we weren't at odds. It was just that him and I needed a break. We were together for 20 years. You know, I saw him more than I saw my first two wives, which wasn't a bad idea, trust me. But I this and that, and sometimes you just need a break. And that's what we took a break, and now we're reunited again. It's like Kiss putting on the makeup again and going back on stage again. You know, we're going to do all the hits that you want to do, but we're going to do it from an autograph signing standpoint. And if I got to be on the outside, walking him down the aisle and helping and throwing a punch here and there, I can do that. And I've told the promoters who are bringing us to do this stuff, Bubba will be the main guy wrestling in the ring, and I'll be the one on the outside tripping and, you know, doing everything that Devon can do on the outside. And if I got to get in the ring, I'll get in the ring, but I'm not taking any bumps.
That's a fair rule.
Yeah. So the dirt sheets, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where you might get exactly what you want. You know, you might get the Dudley Boys, but without, you know, going into a full match detail, you know, you'll get everything that you want to get. You'll get the greatest hits. You might even get a 3D in there.
Nice. I mean, speaking of the 3D, we saw the Usos recently adopt like a version of the 3D. How did that kind of come about? Obviously, did they seek permission from you guys to use that?
They came to me during a live event. We were talking, and I was producing the live event. I think I was producing it with Jamie Noble, and they had asked me. They said, Devon, we were just talking and shooting the stuff. And they were like, yeah, you know, and like when we worked with the Usos, we were talking about, you know, when we hit 3D on them, this and that. And they were just like, yeah, Devon, you know, especially Jay, because Jay is so, you know, energetic. He's like, yeah, boy. He's like, yeah, you get the 3D, bang, yeah. Blah, blah. And he was like, I was just talking to my brother the other day. And I was like, why don't we ask Devon, can we use the 3D? I said, shit. I said, it's an honor and a pleasure to do that for you, from you guys. I was like, I wouldn't have it any other way. If my boys wanted to, you know, wrestle, which they are wrestling, but, you know, the day that they get on the main stage, they're going to want to use 3D too. I said, but
of course,
you know, you can do it now. Absolutely. I said, nobody else is doing it. Plus you're paying homage to me and Bubba. I said, I'm not like some wrestlers who get all bent out of shape. Hey, dude, what the fuck are you using my move, man? I'll choke you out. You know, I don't get mad. Bubba and I don't get mad at that. We actually sit there and say thank you to the younger generation. You know, these guys were kids. And I remember when the Usos used to play with my sons in catering at the events, you know, throwing paper plates like Frisbees around, you know. And it's one of those things now that I'm looking across the ring and it's like the Dudley versus the Usos. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, you talk about a change. Good God. I mean, you know, it blew my mind. So for them to come to me and ask me, is it okay if we use, you know, the 3D? I looked at them and said, F yeah, I would. I didn't say F. I said, you know what? I said, yeah, I would. I said, I would love for you guys to do that. And they were like, great. And I showed them and told them different things about how to do it. Keep your opponent's both legs closed, have him stand straight up. And even when he's coming backwards, have the guy stay straight. Don't fall backwards with him. And when they hit it the first, I was home actually recuperating from the back surgery when I saw it. I'm watching the pay-per-view and all of a sudden I looked and I went, did they just hit 3D? I was like, oh shit, they did. I went back around. I was like, oh, okay, good. And then of course the fans were like, oh, I can't believe they hit the 3D. That's disrespectful. And then I went on Twitter and go F yourselves. I go, they asked for permission to use it. They didn't need to ask, but they asked for permission. They were being nice about it. I said, and they hit it perfectly. Leave these guys alone. Let the new generation be what you wanted us to be back in the day. Because when me and Bubba and the Hardys and Edge Christian came on the scene, nobody believed in us. They were still stuck in the Andre and Hogan, Ric Flair and Dusty era. you know, the British Bulldogs, the Demolition, the LOD, the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express, the Freebirds. No one ever gave us a chance. And then all of a sudden, when the fans finally started giving us a chance, then it became magic, you know. And I just feel like if these fans would stop and get off their high horse and let these, you know, let these kids be them and let them do what they do best, then maybe you'll see the same thing you saw in the Attitude Era. But if you keep knocking them, they're not going to perform to their best because you keep knocking them.
Yeah, no, I get that. So obviously you mentioned your sons then. So they are also in the business going by TNT. Yes. And we recently got to see them on AEW facing the likes of FTR, the Varsity Blondes and SCU. So I just wondered how they found sort of the experience and maybe if you could tell us sort of what's next for them.
Well, right now they're no longer doing things with AEW. They're on it, you know, we're trying to get them to maybe come to NXT and to start doing their thing over here now, which would be great. I'm excited about it. They're excited about it. They just need to polish up on a couple of things and we're bringing them in. You know, we would love to bring them in. And I think they'll be ready when the time comes, when the opportunity is given. I think they're going to be ready. But, you know, again, we got to polish up on a few things and make sure that they're, you know, NXT ready. And that's the thing. Yeah, There's no rush. They're 27 years old. So let them take all the time in the world to polish up and get ready. I just don't feel that AEW would be the right fit for them. I think that they know that. So we're all on the same page when it comes to that. I think the WWE now is the right place for them, especially with Paul being in charge and his vision and Shawn Michaels and Matt Bloom. I think I feel a lot better where I can trust my sons in the business under the Paul Levesque regime, you know, and people think, oh, no, he's on a first name basis with Triple H. So you can call him Paul Levesque. Okay, guys, all you idiots out there that want to sit there and talk shit, Triple H. I'm happy that they would be under the Triple H regime because it's just I love the way things are running here now. And it's nothing but positive vibes here in NXT and on the main roster. And I'm excited about to see what the future holds now. You know, I'm really excited to see what Paul can do with this main roster. And he's doing a great job. Ratings are up. Morale is up. I mean, it's a great business. It's a great place to work for now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not taking anything away from Vince, but it's just a new vision brings new ideas and a fresh new start.
I think I loved your analogy before of it sort of being more like a title change, you know. So it doesn't take away from what Vince has done, but it's an exciting change, an exciting time. I think that's a perfect analogy for it, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So as we kind of come towards the end of questions, you mentioned about the UK, obviously, big fan. You said you were a big fan. Can you recall any kind of fond memories from your time, obviously, across the pond over here in the UK?
I don't think I can go on the air and say it.
Right.
God, I mean, you guys, there's one thing I would say about you guys know how to drink and party. Good yes, God. I mean, it's better than us Americans. I mean, Americans over here, they want to drink and party and fight. You guys fight unless you're provoked. You guys don't just start fights. You know, somebody bumps into you, it's like, oh, excuse me, even when you're drunk. You don't, it's not like here in the US, somebody bumps into you in the club here and they just like, what the fuck, man? What you put your hand? Watch where you're going. You know, God, it's such a pleasure when I'm in the UK. I can't begin to express my love for the UK. I mean, if I didn't have a family, I'd be living in the UK right now. I try to get a visa to go over there. That's how much I love the UK. I really awesome. Do. The wrestling over there is great. You guys are tremendous wrestling fans. You guys know your stuff. And again, you guys know how to make people feel good when you go over there.
Awesome. Well, it's good to know. I mean, obviously, we got to recently see a good UK audience at Clash at the Castle. It's always like a good chance, don't we? So I just wanted to touch on, we believe that you have your own wrestling school. So we just wanted to talk about sort of how your experience was in sort of starting that up and sort of the feeling of being able to sort of give back to the next crop of stars, as it were.
Yeah, well, Bubba and I when we left in 2005 WWE, right before we went to TNA, we went to a wrestling school in Orlando, And we realized that what was being taught to the new generation just wasn't cutting it. And they were and a lot of these schools were teaching kids wrong. And so we thought if we opened up a wrestling school together, we can teach them the right way of doing business. Not to mention, we would have these young kids, you know, going in there and protecting themselves and know how to do the business the right way. So we opened our business. We opened up in 2007, our wrestling school in Kissimmee, Florida. And then Bubba left Florida after we had left WWE wrestling wise. And we left Florida. He moved to Connecticut, and I stayed in Florida. And so we were going to try to do the two different, you know, the two different schools, one in Florida and one in Connecticut. But it just got to the point where we were just on two different pages, you know, on doing things at that point. Because, again, we were on the same page at one point, but then, you know, left and went whatever. So we were just like, listen, you run the school in Connecticut, that's yours, and I'll run the school here in Florida. And it's been taking off in this ever since. It's called DDA, Devon Dudley Academy. It's out of Winter Park, Florida. It's literally, no lie, literally, I've timed it 4 or 5 times, 3 minutes away from the PC Center. So it's right down the block from the PC Center. So as soon as I'm done with the PC Center, I go straight to my school, right down the block. And it's great because now you have a teacher at a wrestling school that knows the ins and outs and how to get to where you want to be. If it's NXT, WWE, or any other organization, I'm going to train you the same way we train the kids at the PC Center. So that way, when you walk in there, you're not walking in there blind. You know what you're doing and you know what you're getting. And I'm not going to fill your head with all sorts of BS. You know, I'm going to tell you what you need to learn and how to do that. I'm not going to make empty promises, though. But I guarantee you, by the time you leave my school, you'll be set and ready. Not only learning how to work inside the ring, but learn how to conduct yourself outside the ring, which is so important because so many careers have been destroyed because of how they are outside of the ring. And I make sure that's one of the biggest things for me, to make sure that they understand that. And they will, you know, do the right thing when it comes to that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Devon, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure. We've loved it. It's been hilarious. But an absolute legend from our childhood, to be fair.
Well, absolutely. You know, it's been an honor. But before we let you go,
I'm sorry it took so long. If the fans don't know it, I'll tell it. It was so many times where we've tried to have this interview, and I think it canceled like 6 or 7 times. And I just remember last night I went, "Oh, not again!" I was like, "You guys are full of shit." I'm like, "No." I was like, I wrote it down on my calendar. I made sure in my head it kept saying, "Okay, you're gonna do this. You're gonna do this at 4 p.m. today. 4 p.m. today. 4 p.m. today." And that's why I texted you guys earlier on Instagram, and I said, "Hey, listen, I'll be there at 4 p.m. today, Florida time, Eastern Standard Time."
we totally understand. Obviously, there's not only the time difference, but you're an incredibly busy man, and we do sincerely appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. I appreciate it. And again, for those of you that want to know the right way of breaking into the business, please follow me on Instagram at DDA, Devon Dudley Academy. You can also go to Devon, that's D-O-N Dudley, Devon Dudley Academy.com. Check out the website as well. You can follow me. You can follow us on Twitter at DDA on Twitter. And you can also follow me on Instagram. Again, like I said, DDA, or my regular Instagram, which is Devon Dudley on Instagram and Twitter as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Devon.
All right, guys. Thank you. Pleasure to be with you guys.